There was melon smashing in Circuit of the Americas. Ross Chastain got his first career NASCAR Cup Series win. The Xfinity Series and Truck Series was in action, but the main topic of the weekend is how Ross Chastain got that win. Was it valid? Was it not? The move he pulled on AJ Allmendinger and Alex Bowman, we'll discuss that next on the Drivers Meeting Podcast. Got a lot to unpack for road course racing. It's that time of year as college basketball takes center stage with the tournament final even upon us. If you're looking to wager this year, BetOnline is the number one spot for all your updated odds and info, along with the great contests, including the bracket contest, where you have a chance to take home the top prize. Head over to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus and your first deposit. Just use our promo code BLEAV, that's B-L-E-A-V, to get started. BetOnline is your continued source for all your sports wagering needs, including live betting and your favorite Vegas casino games. BetOnline, it's where the game starts. Like I mentioned at the top of the show, there was melon smashing in Circuit of the Americas. Melon was smashed at the end of the Cup Series race because Ross Chastain got his first career NASCAR Cup Series win. And I mean, he had been knocking at the door all season long. I mean, going into that race, three straight top threes. I mean, the one team was going crazy. Him and Phil Surgeon had it dialed in, and Circuit of the Americas led a lot of laps. A lot of stuff happened at the end. We'll get that in a little, but I mean, damn, Ross Chastain is now a NASCAR Cup Series winner, Matt. I mean, what does that mean for him and the whole team? I mean, how cool is it to, I mean, another first-time winner in the Cup Series, but this one is almost different, you know, with the new team, Trackhouse Racing. I mean, what was your overall reaction just when he crossed the finish line the next 5 minutes after that? What were you thinking?
Yeah, it's great to be back on the podcast here. Thank you for having me again. And it's great that the second week I'm on the pod, we have a great winner. I think a guy that's been knocking on the door the last couple of weeks, what is it, a third, second, and a second, and now finally gets his win. We've seen this like kind of trajectory for many young drivers moving up through the ranks of NASCAR. And once they get to Cup, sometimes it stalls out for them. We saw that like kind of with Cole Custer, Christopher Bell, Chase Briscoe there from last year. No success there. They obviously got their wins, each of them, but it took some time to get there. And for Ross, for his second season in a quality car, so a Trackhouse Racing car, I didn't really have too many expectations for them coming into the year, but my emotions kind of came out as excitement when Ross crossed the line. I mean, it was an amazing finish there. Very NASCAR road course-esque. And we'll get into that, obviously. But, yeah, I mean, full excitement for Ross's team. You know, we talked about Suarez last week, and I've been no quiet fan of Suarez. I'm a slight fan of his. And I wanted to see the team have success for this season. And Ross is that guy. He's a great driver, and for him to win at COTA, a driver's track, it just makes sense, and that's a huge win overall for him.
Yeah, I mean, he drove a great race all race long, and it seemed very esque of what he had done in previous races, leading laps, and he's done that. And we literally talked about it last episode, Ross Chastain. I mean, he's, you know, hasn't just been going out there and fluking into finishes. He's been able to kind of state dominance at the front of the field, you know, and make themselves known as a team to contend this year. And now finally getting that win, which we felt like was coming after all the consistent finishes they've had this year. And when you look at Justin Marks, I mean, the excitement for him and Daniel Suarez, the race, I mean, Daniel Suarez started out the race in the lead. I mean, he really got wiped out, which took him out of the front, had some issues throughout the race that they had to come back from. I believe it was a, you know, 24th place finish for them. But Trackhouse Racing as a whole, we talked about them last episode, might as well talk about them again, because now they're, you know, a winner in the Cup Series. I mean, that organization, as far as, you know, the powerhouse teams in NASCAR, the four car teams, even the, you know, three car teams with Team Penske, four car, if you include the Wood Brothers, you got a two-car team here in Trackhouse Racing that's really asserting themselves as one of the top, you know, contending teams altogether in NASCAR. You know, and did you expect them at the beginning of the year to really, you know, have this much momentum early in the season of the next gen car?
No, I mean, I definitely hoped that they would. I mean, because like it's a resurrection of kind of Chip Ganassi and the things he sold. And I've always been a little bit of a Ganassi supporter as well. So to see the team kind of shift, and also see Justin, because Chip, as much as Chip was a great team owner and he's a great leader and a multi-time champion and IndyCar, Indy 500 champion as a team owner over there, you know, his NASCAR program was always a little bit, I don't want to say half-assed, but it was always a little bit missing there. It was always a B-grade team. And now Justin and Cohen or Pitbull, and specifically Justin, I think last year he said that I want to be a big team like Gibbs or Hendrick. I want to be looked at that as in like 10 years time. Now, obviously he's doing it now, but he's got to collect those trophies and those championships first, and hiring drivers like Ross Chastain does that. He gets trophies and possible championships with Ross. But yeah, I mean, I didn't expect them to be that strong in this year. I sure hope so. But you know, with the next gen car, it kind of brought out a lot of unknowns, obviously. And I thought that, you know, with the focus and everything that they were doing, they were expanding the shop, putting it in North Carolina, an expanded shop, the old Chip Ganassi Racing shop. I had the opportunity to go there on a North Carolina trip I went last year, and it was a beautiful facility, very clean. We've all seen the photos and everything like that, but now everything is blue and it's track house. So for them to expand there and for them to get this win early and for them to be running as good as they were, no, I did not expect Ross Chastain to be knocking on the door every week. Let's just say that.
Yeah, for sure. You know, crazy the strength they've had at the beginning of this year, but let's talk about how it got done. I mean, the end of that race, a crazy last lap. You know, we've had two totally different races at COTA. Last year was in the rain, but this year it was in the dry, and I felt like a very, very good racing product was had. A lot of people were hating on COTA, I think unfairly, just because last year was done in the rain. But this year was in the dry, and I felt like we got a good road course show, and the last lap was no different. I mean, we had Ross Chastain leading at the white flag. AJ Allmendinger bumped him out of the way. Didn't bump him far enough because Ross Chastain was right there. And Alex Bowman. I mean, Alex Bowman just, you know, he just finds a way to just be there. He just ends up being there at the end of a race. Somehow had the lead for about 5 seconds on the one of the final corners of that race. But basically, Ross didn't let himself get too far away from AJ. Rode his bumper all the way into the second last corner, and he moved AJ up the racetrack, which I think would have been a basic, you know, bump and run, move out of the way. But Alex Bowman happened to be there on the outside, and it basically was just a 2-for-1 deal as he basically shot Allmendinger into Bowman, and these cars just bam. I mean, they plow off of each other, and Allmendinger spun around. Bowman got sent wide, still finished second, but Ross Chastain, the winner. A lot of controversy, people talking about whether it was justified what Ross Chastain did or not. You know, we've talked about it all weekend. We're kind of on the same page here. Me personally, I think you bump somebody first, you're probably, you know, if you don't do it in the last corner, you're probably going to end up getting it back before the end of the race if you don't let them get too far away. So Ross Chastain ended up doing just that. What was your stance on it?
Yeah, I mean, like you said, we kind of agree here. And after further analysis, watching the restart a couple more times, when Allmendinger shoves Chastain into the gravel trap area, you know, over in that area in the stadium section, that's like, you know, obviously that's not putting him out of the race, right? That's just keeping him, you know, putting him to the side, and he has to collect it himself. And that's exactly what he did. So you can knock out the guy, but Ross is good thinking and grabbing the brakes real quick. He was able not to get stuck in that gravel trap or even go further into the grass. Now, he did let him have enough room. I mean, enough to come back and you know, possibly win the race like he did. And then Ross coming in the next few corners, he's hungry for a win. The win for the last 3 weeks has been right in front of his eyes every single time. So he's not going to take it too easy, and he's not going to hold anything back. Now, if this was maybe not definitely not a Kyle Busch, but a guy who wins often, maybe it's not a complete knockout. Maybe it's like a send into the last corner, right? Now, that's fair, and what Ross did was fair, too, in my opinion, because how much he deserved that win after leading, what was like 20, 25 laps more, yeah, almost 30 laps, I think it was. So just him leading that amount of laps, him being in contention every single week so far to this point, the last 3 weeks, a month completely, he has been in complete control of when he has led these races. And for him to let it go against Allmendinger there, then Bowman coming in at the last minute is like this little like bug for Chastain that's like bothering him, you know? Like, I've been battling AJ this whole time, and now Bowman, the little annoying guy, comes into this situation and now wants to steal the win too. So he was able to do that as they bounced off each other, like you said. And it's something I was thinking about, the Gen 6 car, when, you know, when you hit with the Gen 6 car, I don't know if Bowman would have been fine to finish second with that hard hit. It might have hit the tire and made a fender rub, maybe wouldn't let him turn or whatever. I think also the durability of the car showed in that standpoint. But obviously, it's road course racing. It's going to be contact, obviously. And Allmendinger made that move. And yes, Chastain has complete freedom, I think, in my opinion, to make that move back and to take him out of the race, because that's the final two corners. See, AJ didn't take him out six corners before the race, or five corners before the race finished. But this is two more corners to go, a little bit different. Chastain's proof that he deserved the race win also helps his case to make sure, you know, that, like you said before, is it valid or invalid? It's a valid move. He deserved the win. I think if you get hit first, I have all the right to hit you back.
Exactly. And you could tell the corner where AJ moved him up, it felt like he had to. You could tell Ross was protecting going to that corner. You stay low, because usually it's a very interesting corner when you head into the stadium section to hit the apex. You're riding up and down. There's so many different lanes you can pit going to that corner. And he chose to hold the bottom so AJ couldn't get under him. But AJ obviously took the approach. He was going to bump him out of the way, because that was the only way at that point he was going to be able to get by. And I thought it was really interesting that coming to those final laps, they were noting in the commentary booth, and I could see myself, like, the mind games AJ kind of plays when he's driving behind you. Like, really good. I mean, you could tell, like, he'll move to the bottom of the corner, even though he's not going to make a move. He fakes it. So Ross, like, moves low to try to defend when he really doesn't have to, and AJ doesn't do it. I mean, just the driving and the mental game that AJ plays, I thought was really cool coming into those final laps of the race. But overall, I mean,
yeah, see, that's kind of, sorry to interrupt, but see, that's kind of difference between AJ and Ross. Even though Ross won the race, AJ, as we know, is a very skilled road course racer. And for him to make those, like, kind of defying moves, like, to kind of mess with his mind a little bit, shows how comfortable he is behind the race car. Ross is, like, holding on to the lead while AJ is, like, teasing him back there.
And this win for Ross is a season long thing, right? He's running the full season. He's running for the championship. You know, had previous races where he knows he has momentum. He knows he's been so close to that win. He wants to get it done to AJ. It's just another race. You know, he's going for a win. He's going for a trophy. He's setting himself up to chase that trophy like Colleague Racing does. I mean, that's what that car is there for, to just go get victories. And he was going for it, almost got it done, but ended up with a 33rd in the second last corner. He was almost leading the race. So it's crazy how things can turn around. Yeah, 33rd finishing result. So, and Bowman was still able to manage second out of that. Christopher Bell, third place, which is a guy that we talked about last week of needing to do something. They were in trouble.
Yes.
Good finish. Good weekend all around, I think, for C. Bell.
Yeah, so that was good. 2 weeks in a row. Remember, he got that penalty at Atlanta. Yeah, but technically. Obviously, that wasn't a fair move, but the rule was the rule. But if that rule wasn't there, he would have finished third. So, you know, two good weekends in a row for the 20 team.
Yeah, exactly. So overall, I mean, I think it was a pretty solid race at Coda. Would you agree? You vote yes on the glove poll?
I did not. I didn't even see it. Like, I didn't even say yes or no, unless it's still open, right? Yeah, it's actually still open.
I think so,
because he posted on Monday, on Mondays. Yeah, so you can, like, get one sleep in after the race. That's what he always says. Yeah. So, in my opinion, it was a great race. And you know, you can't compare it to any other race in the season, especially with the next gen cars. It was really nice to see the next gen cars on a road course finally, because I feel like they were very suited for it. As we know, a little bit of that V8 supercar technology in there, it drives more like that. So I'm really excited to see how it is for the rest of the year, especially at Watkins Glen, a fast-paced road course. Sonoma will be cool too, to like a nifty, shorter, slower road course. And I think Coda was the good introductory course for the rest of these road courses for the rest of the season. And I'm very satisfied with what we saw.
Yeah, I like where it is in the schedule when I realize, because usually in years past, we haven't had like a road course until the middle of the season, basically. And then when we have them in the middle of the season, it's like, bam, 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 bam. They all go so quick. They're like back to back to back. So I kind of like this being in the first 6 weeks of the season. Now we have a road course here. We also have a road course in the last, you know, six or seven races of the season. I can't remember, you know, wherever the Roval is. And then you have the middle parts where we'll kind of we'll visit Road America. We'll visit Indy Road Course, visit Watkins Glen, Sonoma. They're all kind of spread apart a little bit towards the middle of the year. But I like this being earlier in the year. They moved it up even from last year. You know, now we get a road course in early because we really just didn't have one until forever into the season. It felt like, and I was like, wow, here's a road course. But we got pretty much all different tracks, I think, early in the schedule, which I think is great because we're really going to get to see, you know, everything's unpredictable at this point, but we're seeing where all the teams are at. We're seeing the drivers that are, have been good on every kind of layout. You know, this isn't going to tell us what the rest of the season is going to be like, but we head to Bristol Dirt soon as well. Fox already started the countdown, you know, 20 days until Bristol Dirt. Got to let us know. So, but overall,
looking a picture of Bristol Dirt right now.
Overall, I like the mix of the schedule. I mean, have you been, you know, a lot of people, I feel like there's been excitement this season, the first six races of the year. I feel like every race has its own thing where we've had things to talk about after it. It's been exciting during the race. I mean, have you felt, you know, kind of the same way?
Yeah, I have actually. That's a good point. I haven't really thought about that too much. Obviously, the schedule with the different different types of tracks. Now we're heading into a little short track season now. You know, if you want to call Richmond a short track, which is a problem for some people. But, you know, yeah, you saw two super speedway style races. Atlanta, of course, like influenced super speedway. And then you had the big 2 miler that I love out in California with Auto Club. Las Vegas, the classic mile and a half intermediate. And then you had COTA this week and also Phoenix, right? So Phoenix is its own little unique track that's different than pretty much everyone else on the schedule. So, yeah, I mean, I'm sad. I'm like I said, I've enjoyed what I've seen so far, and it's good for the next-gen car, right? So, like, we're not just seeing who's good right now with the next-gen car. We're seeing how the next-gen car actually performs on the track on these different diverse tracks. Now we're going to see it. Now we're going to see it with a short track this weekend at Richmond, which will be interesting to see. And yeah, I mean, one thing that has stayed consistent between every single week is Trackhouse Racing and their strengths. So other than the Daytona 500, which is obviously a wild card, they've been in contention every week more or less. So yeah, that's a consistent piece.
Yeah, exactly. So I think, you know, every week we've kind of taken it week by week. I feel like everyone's like, all right, now this race is the real test of the next gen car. This race is the real test. Right. I think the biggest test is
Hendrick going to take the lead at lap 5 and never leave it alone.
Exactly. You know, like, exactly.
Never let it go.
I think the biggest test, the basic NASCAR race, is going to happen this weekend at Richmond Raceway. Like, this is just your basic. Yeah. I mean, Richmond, this is a track where, everyone's hated on Richmond, really. I mean, it's people haven't liked the racing. They thought it was boring, or, you know, whether it was night or day, people haven't really liked it. People hated on the night race a lot. They totally took it away. I'm pretty sure. Right. They like, there's we still have two Richmond races, but they're both during the day.
Yes. Yeah,
that's a conversation for another time, but you know,
yeah, I love the nighttime one. Yeah.
We got two Richmond day races on the schedule, but yeah, this weekend, I think it'll be a good test to see. It's just, you know, nothing, every weekend's kind of had its own excitement. Everyone's looking forward to, and now we're going to Richmond. So we'll see how this weekend goes. I like the Xfinity series outlook. I mean, the entry lists were just put up. I don't know if you've looked over them, but a lot of new faces, a lot of younger faces in that field too, I think, for sure.
Yeah. I only looked over that Ryan Preece is on it right now, but I suppose we'll get to that later in the episode.
We'll run down all the entry lists later in the show, so we might as well just finish up talking about COTA, kind of recap real quick. You know, some of the finish. Well, we talk about the Xfinity and truck races too. The doubleheader on Saturday that we had, two races, Xfinity, AJ Allmendinger was the winner there. Truck series, Zane Smith was the winner there. We can start with the Xfinity series. I think was a pretty solid race. You had, you know, basically your class of the field is going to be AJ Allmendinger in the Xfinity series at road course. No Austin Cindric. It was kind of just a throw up in the air who was going to contend with Allmendinger. And we saw Cole Custer up there part of the race. We saw Sam Mayer show some speed as well. Really the guy that was battling with Allmendinger, which quite frankly was Ross Chastain in that DGM car, the 92, up there towards the front. He was taken out on a restart, was only able to rebound to 17th, but Xfinity Series, I mean, we know how dynamic the lineup is through the year. We know how crazy the road courses are going to be because you have Cup guys racing it. You got road course ringers. A lot of good finishes up and down. But overall, I mean, what'd you think about the Xfinity race? Obviously, AJ Allmendinger, pretty predictable winner. But were there any surprises that you saw inside the top 10 that really stuck out to you?
Yeah, not particularly. But I did see the race, obviously. And for me, it was pretty good. And I think that AJ was my pick on Saturday too.
Yeah.
But no specific finishers. I know that DGM had an impressive weekend. They put all their three cars in the top 10 in qualifying, which was really, really impressive. And it was very, very surprising. I mean, I know they got road course ringers, but I didn't expect for them to have that much speed. And then Chastain, who was battling for the win there, as we know, who didn't get the result that he obviously wanted. I think it was a 26th place finish or something.
17th. They were able to rebound.
17th. Oh, okay. Yeah. But he got spun late. Right.
Yeah.
So yeah, now I have the results in front of me. So yeah.
I think Mike Snyder in sixth. I mean, that's a big run, I think, for their team.
Right. Sure. Yeah. Well, Mayan has some European experience in the NASCAR Euro Series. He's always been kind of solid on the road courses. He was good at the Indy road course last year in the two car, I believe. And then also to see Parker Kligerman have a good run too in that 35 car, which was kind of expected. But I know that 35 car doesn't have too much speed, or we can't base it off too much. But I know that Parker is obviously a wheelman, and he did the double duty that day. Miguel Peludo finishing in ninth was also a pretty good notable effort. I know he was sitting right outside the top 15 kind of all day, but those JRM cars had speed. Sam Mayer impressed me. Sam is kind of like a weird driver for me. I see him as like this possible Gibbs-esque driver, but sometimes like he kind of like flops. Like wherever Justin Allgaier is not good, or maybe Gregson's running like mediocre, like sixth place for him these days. You know, Gregson's getting, you know, really, really impressive these days now. But whenever he's like running sixth or seventh, Gregson is, and then Allgaier's like sitting outside that top 10. Mayer's not as strong as he needs to be. I guess it's a JRM thing. But when JRM goes to JRM specific centric tracks where they're fast, I see Sam doing really, really well. And I know JRM cars are pretty good around the road courses. Allmendinger is just a road course beast, as we'll say. He and Chastain were the show on Saturday and the show on Sunday in a way. So, not a surprise there, obviously. But Austin Hill is someone that I wanted to note on. Forgot that Hill finished second. That's back-to-back second-place finishes. Half of his finishes this season are in the top five, which is a first in Daytona, a second last week in Atlanta, and a second off this weekend in COTA. So that's been really, really impressive. Austin has outran Sheldon. And I'll turn it back to you. Did you think that Austin was going to outrun Sheldon in the beginning part of the season? Because I had Sheldon a little bit in front of him because he always ran a little bit better in trucks. Obviously, he's the champion, and he's going into the flagship two car that won the championship in 2019. Seemed like they put some favoritism towards him. But Austin has really done really, really well here in these first couple weeks on different tracks.
Yeah, I did. I had Sheldon Creed probably doing a lot better, not a lot better, just a little bit better than Austin Hill. But that kind of brings me back to just a point that like a thought that I had last year is I feel like Austin Hill really just flies under the radar. Like he in the truck series, he was a very consistent driver. That's what he was. He would, you know, he went most of last truck season without getting a win, but he was the regular season points winner. Points champion, I believe he was leading the points standings like all year long, and he didn't get his wins until like the last few races before the playoffs. And it kind of
Nemechek won it. He beat Hill just a little bit.
Yeah, he was right there contending for it.
Yeah, right there.
And like Austin Hill, it just I feel like he's doing it again in the Xfinity series. Yeah. He's just being there. He's quietly just being there at the end, contending up there in these races where we don't like. He's nobody's like race pick to win. Nobody's out here saying, oh, this is an Austin Hill type track. Like he's just there. Like he's always up there contending. And all of a sudden he's getting these good finishes. And he did have like a rough start to Auto Club where he had a, you know, terrible race there. Cause he got turned into the fence. There's nothing he could really do about that. But other than that, I mean, it's just been a very solid season for Austin Hill. I definitely expected RCR to be, as a whole, in Xfinity pretty good this year, just because of the drivers that they have. And they also got alliances with some other cars that I think are going to be strong this year. But definitely, I didn't see him being stronger than Sheldon Creed, at least earlier in the season, but he's doing it. I mean, he's there. That 21 team seems to be hitting it a lot more than the 2 team does. But I think both of them obviously will come together, and they'll you know, by the middle of the season, I think both of them have the potential to be very strong and running up for wins.
Yeah, one thing to note, a former Chevrolet RCR affiliated driver, Jeb Burton, he was up there in the top three, right? Because he was hitting.
He got booted. He
cut the corner. Right.
They said he cut the corner. He was fighting it. He said he didn't. I mean, same with Jeremy Clements, too. That's two things that I almost forgot about that we can note here on the show. Jeb Burton was running third, I believe. Jeremy Clements was running fourth. And both of them on back-to-back laps got tagged for cutting the course, which they both didn't agree with. They both didn't think they did, and they thought other people had been doing it. That's kind of been the story of the whole weekend. But basically, Jeb Burton for Auer Motorsports, I mean, third place for him and that team would have been incredible. They finished 23rd. Jeremy Clements, I mean, that would have been great for them. A fourth place finish at COTA, that's really what they were looking at, finished 24th because of the penalties. So, I mean, they dropped 20 positions in total, both of them, because of those penalties. But yeah, like you noted, I mean, I almost forgot about that. Jeb Burton was really having a solid run there for Auer Motorsports. And it could have been a huge day for Auer Motorsports, because if he doesn't get kicked out there, that's him, Brett Moffitt, ended up finishing seventh. And Anthony Alfredo, who finished 13th, they both would have been all in the top 15 if he didn't
triple top 15 penalty. There. Yeah.
Which very I think impressive. That team needs, yeah. Which I think Auer Motorsports needs a finish like that. Right. They've had a few rough weekends with just any of their drivers. I mean, Alfredo didn't even get to start at Phoenix, and they've had some incidents happen during the races that's knocked them out of races and stuff like that. But they've been able to manage some good finishes. And we know Brett Moffitt, Anthony Alfredo, Jeb Burton are three talented drivers. And that was one team that I was really looking forward to that had a very interesting dynamic. But they can definitely need to pick it up, get some better luck throughout the season for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. And one more thing, just a note on that. Also helped Jeb's morale, too, I think.
Yeah.
You know, Brett's always a constant top 12 finisher, runner at least. And then he gets up in the top 10 and finishes there like he did on Saturday. And then Anthony got that fifth place in Auto Club. I think it was fifth, if I remember correctly, you know, by that whole fresh tire strategy. But, you know, Jeb kind of needs that good result, right, to match his teammates. I don't think he's had one yet for like a good top five or top 10. So, you know, 23rd is obviously not what he wanted for him. I think he sent out a tweet and he said, great job to my boys today. We finished third or something like that. So he believes that he finished third. And, you know, honestly, he probably deserved that top 10. But and it's a fine line, and maybe NASCAR didn't have consistency there, but you know, he'll be back next week. Obviously Richmond, I think a short track where he can make the difference.
Yeah, for sure. I think he was pretty solid there with colleague last year as well. So I think a great opportunity for him to run consistently there. So last thing we'll note on for the COTA weekend is the truck race, which had a very crazy finish. I thought the race was
yes.
I think historically, I find it hard to get invested into a truck where, like, I'm invested, I'm watching the whole thing, obviously, but I find it hard for maybe me or just the casual fan to get invested in a truck race that's on like a doubleheader day. You know what I mean? Like I've always felt like that's a thing where it's just like you run two races back to back. And I think the truck series, I've thought for the longest time, is something that was like, you know, glorified as truck night in America, right? We're running Friday night truck races, you know, by themselves. Right. The teams get there Friday morning, they race Friday night, and they're out, right? That was like the truck series. And I, you know, COTA doesn't have lights. They, you know, are doing what they can. They'll just run a doubleheader on Saturday. But I think trucks at road courses are just very odd, especially on a weekend where we're having multiple of those road courses, where we already have an Xfinity and Cup race coming up next. The truck race is just kind of the butt of the show. Yeah, they're just there running the race. And, you know, when you take in broadcasting factors, the way it's presented, and just the racers in general, the truck series in general, it's going to be a lackluster race. And I don't think we've seen a clean truck series road course race in a long time anyways. But the race was you know, like I enjoyed it. The finish was nuts because we, you know, had a bunch of overtime restarts, and that was probably bound to happen. You know, if you didn't see it, or if our viewer, any of the viewers didn't really see it, it was Alex Bowman, Stuart Friesen, Kyle Busch. Kyle Busch was leading. Stuart Friesen, or Alex Bowman, I think he poked out first, and then Stuart Friesen kind of made a defensive move to kind of try to halt him from passing him. And in that, he went below Kyle Busch. Alex Bowman went below him. All three wide, bam. And none of them won because Zane Smith drove by all of them and won the race. So that's how that stuck ended.
Stuck inside there on a turn, that sharp turn, turn 11, I believe it is, something like that.
Yeah. Basically a Truck Series-esque finish right there. That is what I probably could have expected. Alex Bowman.
Fair, it was exciting for sure.
It was very
what exciting. I did not expect for Alex Bowman to kind of like flop like that, to be honest with you. But I thought he was going to go in there and he was going to make the corner like as expected. But obviously making that move, I mean, missing that move and not making it, had that really good finish and obviously gave Zane Smith his second win of the year, which is a big thing because he did win the first two stages. He was in contention for the win of the race. He didn't have the speed that the 52 had or the speed that definitely the 51 had. But something that surprised me after the race, and I don't know if you noted on it, it was Kyle Busch's reaction. Kyle was quite calm in his post-race interview. I found that to be like the biggest thing that I took away from the race. Maybe he didn't want to get upset about a truck race, or he was happy that his, you know, his teammates finished fine, finished well. Nemechek finished second, I believe. And then Chandler Smith, I think, finished up there too, unless he had an issue. I think he was happy overall by KBM's performance, especially what happened to the week prior. And now it's just some positive momentum moving through here. I don't know how you took KB's response. I know he had some altercation with Alex Bowman. They, you know, he came and talked to him. Alex didn't really look at Kyle's face. Kyle didn't look at him back. He said, okay. He kind of agreed with what Alex said, knowing that Alex kind of put the blame on himself and what move he made. But you know, that's the product of workhorse racing with the trucks. You got to be physical, and you got to be, late in the race. You got to be late on the brakes. And unfortunately, Alex, not knowing the truck too much, maybe that's what kind of led to that, making that last desperate move. And that's what let him lose the race with two laps to go. But yeah, it wasn't a fantastic race in my opinion either. What you said with the doubleheader days. I always, like, it's not even just Truck Night in America. I'm always anticipating the Xfinity race more than the truck race coming 100%. Into the weekend, especially the last couple of years. So I'm like, can we just get this thing already done so we can get to the Xfinity race? Like, let's just cut this race in half, move up the Xfinity race by an hour, and then after that I can watch Supercross. Like, that's pretty much what it comes down to.
Yeah, exactly. I think at the end of the day on the Kyle Busch situation, I just think he didn't care that much. Like, he just shrugged it off. Yeah. He's just like, he knows he's racing in the Truck Series. He knows what series he's racing in. Obviously, he's probably going to be a little more upset towards Alex Bowman because, like, hey, he probably feels like you know better than that to do something like that if he was upset at him. But at the end of the day, I mean, if he gets wiped out by just Derek Krause or something, not to pick on Derek Krause, but if he gets wiped out by Derek Krause,
he's been doing it a lot lately.
If he gets wiped out by Derek Krause, he's probably not going to care because he expects it. I'm sure he was just a little bit, you know, and Alex Bowman probably felt he needed to talk to him because he probably knew he knows better. And none of them felt like they were in the wrong. They were all blaming everybody else. You know, Alex Bowman probably blamed Stuart Friesen. Stuart Friesen blamed Alex Bowman. But yeah, I feel like the truck race, because I just feel like it was long. I don't know how long it was, really. I mean, all the races this weekend were long. The Cup race was, I think, three and a half hours, I believe, in total length. Somewhere around there.
Yeah. And the Cup race, the first two stages went so fast. But then those cautions drag out the race so much.
Yeah, exactly. So I think the Truck Series, I mean, I literally had this thought in my head. I don't know if it ever happened, but why don't we just take the Truck Series, right? And we put them on a smaller layout of the track. Like, you know, when you're playing Forza and there's different outs and there's like short circuits, let's just put the trucks on like a short circuit, not have them drive like 3 miles around the racetrack. Like,
yeah, I think the short circuit like cuts through the S's and you go around onto the back stretch. And
just
then
something.
And it, like, goes around the track.
Cut the track in half, you know, maybe keep the same laps or add a few more because it's shorter. And let's just run on a shortened road course for the Truck Series. Like, I feel like just making that the Truck Series drag around that entire track for, let's see, 42 laps is just such a drag. Like, it's just, it's long.
It is a drag.
Like you said, like, I'm just waiting for the Xfinity race.
Slow they're going. Like, how
they go
slow,
so much
the truck
slower
series
too.
Are going. They go so slow. And one thing I didn't notice when we went through the Cup and Xfinity races, but when you're watching like Formula One qualifying and then you're like having the truck race and you see how fast Formula One is moving through the Jeddah circuit and how quick it is, and then you watch the road course of trucks, it's like you're watching snails move.
It's just watching in slow motion. Yeah, there's
everything is in slow motion.
Yeah, we can note on F1 here for a second before we kind of start wrapping up. I know that a lot of people make comparisons of the racing and the broadcasting, and you know, let's just start overall with the F1 race because I know a lot more NASCAR fans are watching F1 now. You know, there was a race. It was pretty watchable for most fans like us to wake up and watch it at a 1 p.m. start. I thought that was pretty nice. Felt a lot, you know, very unusual to watch a 1 p.m. F1 race because I don't think there is one for the rest of the season until they come to Miami and then Texas. And I think there's one other, Mexico. I think Mexico is at 4 and then Canada was at 3. That's besides the point. We'll talk about this weekend's race, which I thought ended up being, you know, pretty solid racing product. There was a lot of stuff going on at the beginning of the race, towards the end of the race, middle parts of the race. The Alpines were trying to kill each other. That was pretty funny. Yeah. And they ended up they ended up not killing each other. But, well, Fernando Alonso's car died at the end. Unfortunately, everyone started going crazy at the end.
Went out.
Yeah. The first 10 laps of that race were, I mean, I was drawn to the screen. I mean, I was just. It's so things quick, that tight. Track.
Yeah,
that track is so dynamic. And I didn't have, like, you know, we know with Mick Schumacher's wreck, you know, the track isn't like the safest in the world. That's not the most ideal racetrack if you're trying to keep everyone from not, you know, getting a concussion or arm injury or something like that, whatever. Injured in the race car. Luckily, he was okay. Definitely scary incidents can happen at a track that fast and that thin. I mean, the way the track grows, it does look pretty cool. I mean, I drove it on F1 2021 on my Xbox One. It was pretty nice. I kind of enjoyed it. It was fun.
Yeah.
It's very dynamic, but the race overall, I mean, I didn't have too much expectations for it. Cause I'm kind of sitting there like, where do you pass? You know what I mean? It's so like, you know, so thin, there's so many quick turns. It's like, where are you making passes? But those long straightaways, I mean, really helped. And, you know, they keep talking about, obviously the new rules package for Formula One allows more closer racing, you know, puts in the driver's hands to make these passes. And obviously you have DRS and Formula One that helps on the straightaways. But I just, for those 10 laps, I was glued to the screen. The middle part of the race is pretty nice too. There was some strategy going on and swapping of positions. They were tracking Lewis Hamilton's progress through the field. But then the end of the race, everybody started dying. They're all just losing power. I mean, they're Ricardo had to take it behind the wall. Alonso had to take it behind the wall and Bottas, right?
All three of them had problems.
Yeah. And then a crash. Yep. Then Latifi crashes, changes everything. Right. That was the one right before it stops, right in the middle of it, actually, because I was kind of pissed at that caution, like not like them throwing. Obviously, I was just pissed it happened because I was kind of looking forward to see how it played out through the green flag stops, because I think how it played out was Leclerc pit before Verstappen. I think that's how it went. Right. They were I think the Red Bull were betting on what Ferrari was going to do. And they said do the opposite.
Right. So, exactly. Right before the caution came out, the safety car, they put Perez down because Ferrari put out all their mechanics. So they put Perez down thinking that Leclerc was
psyched them out.
Now, if Ferrari never did that, then Perez stays out, caution, the safety car comes out, and then Perez goes down with the rest of the leaders. But unfortunately, obviously, for anybody that didn't see it, he went down pit lane and then everyone else stayed out. That safety car came out and then he stays fourth. He comes out like fourth. And then everybody goes down, the leaders go down. And unfortunately when they come out, he doesn't have full speed, obviously, because the track is in yellow conditions. He can't catch back up to them and take the lead back. So he's sitting fourth for the restart, I believe. And that's where he ends up finishing. So Sainz and Leclerc and Verstappen, were able to just kind of, you know, gain one position from that. And that obviously hurt Sergio, but it didn't hurt Red Bull in the overall finishing order, because one of the drivers obviously still won the race, particularly those last like seven laps after the final restart was like my favorite time of the race. Obviously crunch time to win the race. Ocon battle for sixth place was amazing too. The tracking progress of Hamilton was really good too. The race had a nice setup. You know, you had the Ferrari and Red Bull battle. You had Russell, who outqualified Hamilton. You had the Alpines that were looking strong. McLaren's kind of made a comeback. They looked a little bit better this weekend. And then you had Hamilton with his worst start since 2017 in Brazil. And then worst start by Pace since Britain 2009. So Brazil, he obviously wrecked the car, and that's why he didn't start up front. But now this time he had to come from the back. He was a little bit wary on Pace, and obviously finishing 10th wasn't ideal for him. But just to see that race play out how it did with the safety car, I kind of enjoyed the safety car a little bit, not at Sergio's expense. It would have been nice for him to kind of lead a whole race and be able to maybe take the win, you know, not have a race win for Red Bull like he did last year in Azerbaijan, where he just took it because of Max's problem and Lewis's mistake. So to have the whole Red Bull and Ferrari dynamic kind of squeezed together now, you know, Red Bull definitely has a little bit of a stranglehold on Ferrari leaving this race. So that's really interesting too. And it's going to be an amazing championship battle. This race is very quintessential F1, the strategy, the factors of, like, you know, drivers coming from the back, the championship leaders close and very tight at the front. You know, those things are exactly what makes an F1 race really good. And this race was definitely miles better than Bahrain.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I definitely enjoyed this a lot more than Bahrain. You know, Bahrain obviously had a little bit of an exciting finish. Obviously, everyone's hyped for the start of the F1 season, but definitely a more condensed and exciting race that we saw at Jeddah than we did the weeks previous, and definitely set to be a great Formula One season. And I'm sure we'll in and out kind of recap throughout the year on here. But
yeah,
overall, you know, overall kind of sending it back to NASCAR, you know, every road course that's brought up, stages at road courses, do we need them? We don't need them. You know, I mean, I'm a guy that thinks, like, if we take stages away, we should probably do it all year, right? Like, we should either have them for all the tracks, or we don't, you know, cause it feels weird if we did, like, we gave a set of points for one race and then we didn't for another race, or if we're going to take them away, let's take them away altogether. If we're going to keep them, let's just keep them for all the racetracks, but definitely the road courses, if something were to be done there, I mean, nobody would complain. You know, I feel like vastly at least, but stages of the road course, it's just odd, you know, especially when you wake up and you watch a Formula One race and you watch how that goes and you watch the race, it's action packed. It finishes in about an hour and a half. Like, we were talking about this, and then we're sitting in a NASCAR race where the races seem longer now. I feel like the road courses, because they didn't used to be this long. They didn't used to seem this long, these road course races, but every stage caution, I mean, that's putting at least 15 minutes on the race. I think every caution, you know, the stage yellows take a while because they have to coast around, then they have to let everybody pit. And then they, you know, and there's some quickie yellows where they just get back to racing a little bit quicker, but every caution is going to be at least 10, 15 minutes, if not longer, depending on cleanup or what they're doing at the end of the stage. If there's a caution before the stage, they have to let them go around and finish the stage under caution and then pit. And then so it's just like, I feel like that's definitely a factor of the races being longer, is we're having these stages on the road courses and it's taking a little bit longer for everything to get situated. But overall, I'm definitely on the side where I wouldn't mind if, you know, they were taken away or they did something with them. Cause it just feels like such a drag sometimes. And in road course racing, people look at it differently as obviously as compared to F1 or IndyCar or NASCAR. But, you know, there's times where people are, and I think this is some point that I made, I can't remember when I was talking about it, but I feel like in races, when you start at the rear, I don't look at it as big of a feat, you know, as it was before, because you have stage yellows, you have stage breaks. Sometimes you have competition yellows. Like, it doesn't seem, if you have an incident at the beginning of the race, I mean, there's guys that could spin like 16 times in an NASCAR race and they finish 10th. And you hear about it on the broadcast, they're like, man, what an impressive race by, you know, this guy driving the most powerful car in the field. He's gotten spun 10 times, but he's somehow managed to make it back in the top 15. And it's like, well, that somehow is because we already have a bunch of yellows. We have a free pass. We have a lucky dog in NASCAR. Like, they give you every possible chance to get back in the race if you mess it up at the beginning. It's not like in other series where you have an incident on lap 10 and they're covering it right away, cause they're like, oh man, how's this going to affect this race? Like, it's a big deal on the broadcast. And NASCAR really don't care. Cause yeah, he's going to be back in 10 laps. Like, you know, that's just how NASCAR works. But I mean, we've talked about this before on the pod. Like, do you feel like it's a rightful direct comparison to compare, like, the F1 broadcast that we saw yesterday and the NASCAR broadcast, or the way the NASCAR road course race went? Is that an easier comparison to make, like road course to road course, instead of like when people before were comparing Circuit of the Americas to Kansas? Like, do you think it's easier to compare road course to road course?
Oh yeah, Circuit of the Americas to Kansas is such a bad comparison. You can't even make that comparison because Formula One right now, you know, last season only comes to America once. Exactly. So NASCAR is an American based series. It's like if NASCAR went over there to Silverstone, I believe there'd be a lot of people there, I think, to check it out. Not just for the intrigue of like the marketing of NASCAR or anything like that, but not to get off the point here. Yeah, I mean, it's fair to make the comparison on both road courses, but I don't see anybody making this comparison like 7 years ago. It's only because Formula One right now is nice and shiny, really pretty, and looking good in the United States.
Yeah,
because
nobody cared years ago. Netflix, of course. What? Nobody cared years ago. This wasn't a thing.
Nobody cared really years ago. Not even racing fans cared years ago. You know, forget about the sports fans, you know, your guys up in New England and your sports fans in the Midwest and out in California, they don't care about Formula One 5-7 years ago, and neither did race fans. So if we don't care, they're not going to care. But now we care because it's spreading around the United States. People care about it, and not even just race fans like us. So look, I've been watching Formula One since 2014. It's always been a very professional, like you were talking about the broadcast, let's say. Let's just take it from this point of view. It's always been a professional broadcast. Now I watched the NBC broadcast. You know, that's when it had Lee Diffie on there, and two other gentlemen that I can't remember the name of, but they're so synonymous with Formula One. But yeah, they're kind of Formula One's presentation. When Will Buxton was also the pit road reporter, I look at Formula One as a very simpler production only because there's 20 cars. There's 20 cars. There's 20 drivers to interview. There's 10 teams. There's 10 team bosses, but there's only like three or four that TV really cares about, you know? So it's a little harder to compare it to NASCAR. NASCAR is this kind of bigger thing. And, you know, and you might see some random car pop up on the entry list, you know, in a cup race, like the NY Racing team. You know, they show up once in a while. Floyd Mayweather's team, the 50 team, the money team. You know, you see them once in a while. With Formula One, you know that it's going to be these 20 cars showing up to the track every week. It's not as much as a wild kind of goose chase to follow all these different things. The Formula One racing is also simpler. You know, a couple pit stops, and then that's it. And then when will you pit? Will you short pit? Well, you do two stops. Well, you do three stops. Can we do it in a one-stop strategy? You know, different things like that. And then with NASCAR, it's just a little bit more complicated. Some things are thrown in every week. There's different contenders, different teams that are good certain weeks. You know, like Trackhouse coming into this week, we thought it was going to be a B-level team. And right now, Haas looks like a B-level team in Formula One. Haas is not going to win next week. Ross Chastain can go back to back this, you know, next weekend, in my opinion. So those are different things as well. You can compare, I guess, the road course racing, but you can compare it in some ways, but you can't compare the actual on racing track product, because you're not going to sit here and compare IndyCar on road courses compared to F1. And those cars are even more similar than NASCAR stock cars to Formula One race cars. So you can't compare it simply because you're not going to compare the Gen 6 racing to the next gen racing. You can compare it from I like this more. Oh, I don't like this. But you can't compare the actual passing. You can't compare the feeling of the car. You can't compare the look of the racing, in my opinion, only because it's not the same thing. And Formula One and NASCAR cannot be more opposite. The fans cannot be more opposite. What they agree on cannot be more opposite. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, I cannot make the comparison between the two motorsports, but NASCAR can learn some things from Formula One and vice versa. But that's more, they can learn different departments. See, Formula One can learn from NASCAR in rules and regulations, you know, letting the boys have at it, you know, let the drivers race sometimes. Don't throw all these like investigations. And then NASCAR can take it from a standpoint of taking themselves a little bit more seriously. driver's not saying, oh, I'm just the lucky guy that gets to drive the race car. No, you're an actual race car driver that has intelligence and knows how to wheel these cars better than anybody in the rest of the garage. Denny Hamlin knows how to drive his car better than Kyle Busch knows how to drive his car. You know, he's working with his team. There's a level of intelligence there. There's a level of preparation. And that's something where NASCAR can kind of take itself more seriously, walk away from the times of the past and turn it into maybe more of a sport that we need to see grow for the future. Like it has been for sure. There's been different moves and things like that. But at the end of the day, it comes down to the Netflix show Drive to Survive. I know I went out in a couple of array of topics here, but Formula One having that show on Netflix, it changed everything, as we know, for Formula One in America. We see Las Vegas now with becoming the third race in the United States. There's, you know, I would imagine there's going to be more in the future as it keeps on growing. But also, obviously, Formula One has to watch out their calendar and things like that. But yeah, you can make the comparisons, but it's not constructive, in my opinion. And that's kind of where I conclude with it. But yeah, I mean, I would love for NASCAR to succeed more than Formula One. Right now, the momentum is with Formula One. But NASCAR still has its favoritism in America, for sure. But where they're losing out, you know, there might be now more fans of F1 in New York now. You know, in New York, there might be more Formula One fans than NASCAR fans. You know, but still throughout the country, it is still NASCAR-dependent, NASCAR majority.
Yeah, exactly. That's well put. And NASCAR, you know, a lot of people have been known that it's been on the rise of lately. And I think we're off to a great start to this season for NASCAR for sure. It's been glad to see, and it continues this weekend in Richmond. And I think that's right. Another test on the schedule. How's this weekend going to do? Richmond, a track where, you know, we know none at the beginning, people hate on it a lot, and we're going to see what happens this weekend, but two races, Cup and Xfinity. We'll keep it simple for this weekend. Just two races, the Xfinity Series 1:30 on FS1 on Saturday, and the Cup Series returns to Fox 3:30 p.m. on Sunday. So the entry list were put out. We got some change of names on the Xfinity Series entrants. We got only one additional name on the Cup Series entrants. That's Greg Biffle. He'll be returning to drive the 42 at Richmond, which is nice to see. But overall, Richmond, a track that I think is looking for redemption. With this next gen car, I mean, are you more optimistic towards it? You think we'll see a good racing?
I think we will. I mean, you know, it's the first time we're going to see it on a slower racetrack, smaller oval, short track, if you want to call it that. So yeah, I agree. I agree that that I think the way you said before, that I think we're going to see some upgrade with Richmond. I know it's been a little bit of a boring track for most people. I enjoy it. I do enjoy the night races better. But I do think, yeah, I think we'll see a pretty decent showing. I think drivers will be tenacious to see how much they can push the car on this kind of racetrack. So obviously we're all waiting for kind of Bristol, you know, on the pavement, of course, not the dirt. Who wants to see that? No, I'm joking. But anyways, yeah, Richmond, yes, very, very excited for it. I'm also really excited for the Xfinity race. I think the Xfinity race is always pretty solid, in my opinion.
Yeah.
So I really want to see that. And yeah, I think the Cup race, it can only bring good things for this weekend, only because, I mean, I'll also say, because we've been seeing a quite competitive Cup series as well. And I want to see if Reddick can kind of, you know, maybe he has some loss of speed. Maybe he's not as fast as the other cars right now. Like Hendrick has the speed, Trackhouse has speed, Joe Gibbs has hints of speed here and there, Penske has speed also. Maybe like Reddick is lacking from that speed, and he can use Richmond as like kind of a crutch, maybe be competitive this weekend, lead a lot of laps, win the race, only because, you know, a driver can make the difference on these kind of short tracks. So I'll be really interested to see that. I predicted last week that RCR would be good this weekend. They were, both got top 10s with Austin getting 10th there. So that was good. I want to see if they can kind of progress into that. RCR is a big team that I've been watching. That and RFK, but they've been struggling a little bit. But yeah, RCR, looking for them this weekend.
Yeah, for sure. So before we wrap up here, we'll do our race picks. Sure. We'll do a race pick and then someone that you think to watch, maybe a dark horse, somebody that you want to keep an eye on this weekend, maybe towards the middle part of the field. So we'll start with Xfinity for Richmond. Give me your race pick and then someone maybe towards the middle to watch, make something happen.
Alrighty, yeah. So I got the entry list posted up here. Oh, John Hunter. Might have to go that way.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do like that. Yeah, race pick, super early race pick. I like to pick the race. I usually pick my, you know, race winner probably like 5 minutes before the race starts. Obviously, after we see practice and qualifying. But yeah, give me some of the 18. Yeah, I kind of like Nemechek this weekend. And I also like Priest too. But I'll go with Nemechek.
Yeah.
Dark horse would be Priest. I know it's going to be an SHR prepared car. So yeah, I'll go with that.
All right. So my race pick, yeah, John Hunter Nemechek is definitely someone to watch. At Richmond, I'm going to go with Noah Gregson getting it done again this weekend. That's just going to be a safe pick for me. Yeah, he got it done last year, and he's just been consistent all year long. If it wasn't him, I'd go with Justin Allgaier or Josh Bear. Like, I feel like a junior motorsports car is going to get it done this weekend. That's my thought.
Yeah.
John Hunter Nemechek, definitely a great pick as well. But my middle pack guy, dark horse to watch, is going to be Rajah Kruth, who is making his debut weekend for Alpha Prime Racing. We're hoping to have him on here this week, him and Tommy Joe. That was the plan later in the week to get him on before he steps in for his Xfinity Series debut. You know, I had the privilege of being there for his test at New Smyrna. So that was fun to be at. And there's a lot of excitement surrounding him. And also, not to take away from the fact that Howie DeSavino is also making his debut, Xfinity Series debut for Alpha Prime Racing in the 45. So yeah, Raj definitely, I think the whole world's going to be watching him to see what he can do in his first career start. But yeah, definitely back to my race pick. I think a junior motorsports car gets it done. So we'll swap it over to Cup now. Your race winner pick, and then someone maybe towards the middle to watch out for.
You're killing me here with these early race picks. You got to go with your gut, right? Like on these.
Yeah.
I mean, I love to say Daniel Suarez, but I can't fully say that one. That would be a little bit of a pick for wanting instead of for hoping instead of an actual educational pick. But yeah, I'll probably go with Penske has been popping up in my mind. I feel like Blaney can win. Like, I feel like Blaney's just going to break out and win one time, you know, in these next couple weeks. But I know, like, Joe Gibbs has been historically good at Richmond, as we know. I'm going to go Blaney. I'll go Blaney. And a dark horse pick, I'll go, man, something with Richmond and Truex. I'll go Truex as a dark horse, but he has not had the speed to show, like, for a win so far this year. So, but I'll go with Truex, yeah.
Yeah. So my race win for Richmond. So you got Blaney, right?
Yeah.
I'm gonna go with Joey Logano to get it done at Richmond this
weekend. I had a feeling you were gonna go with him.
And then my dark horse,
not a bad choice,
somebody to watch in the middle. Something that you noted in the last one of the last things you said is the RFK driver, part co-owner, Brad Keselowski. If any track he's gonna get a win at, it's going to be these types of racetracks, or run well at. I won't say win, but I'll say run well. He needs to run well at these tracks, like Richmond, like New Hampshire, tracks that he's dominated at in the past. So that's my dark horse for this weekend at Richmond. It's definitely going to be Brad Keselowski. So definitely hoping for a good performance out of him. But well, we got another weekend down of recapping COTA, previewing Richmond a little bit, and after that we'll have Martinsville on the schedule. So another short track. So we got two short tracks in a row. It's going to be fun to watch.
Yeah, it is. I think two short tracks coming here. Martinsville is going to be a lot of fun in my opinion, and good to see how the next gen car does. But like I said earlier, yeah, it's a little short track season now, and kind of getting into two different short tracks, but both short tracks to be fair. So like you said with Keselowski, just one thing to note on there. This is like kind of a driver's track where a driver can make a difference, in my opinion. Might not be the most skill or demanding track, but it is definitely a track where the driver can put the speed in the car, opposed to like a power dominant track where the engine kind of has all the influence into it. So I'm not saying RFK is down on engine power, but they have definitely not been that quick, and they've ran into some problems over the last couple of races. But yeah, if Brad can make the difference here this weekend, that kind of sells you on feeling more of that. Oh yeah, Brad can maybe squeeze out, you know, good finishes when he goes to tracks that he has been good at historically, or tracks like restricted plate races where it becomes the field becomes a little bit more equal. So yeah, very interested to see what happens this weekend. The 67th annual Toyota Owners 400.
Yeah. 67th annual. So it's going to be, I think I'm optimistic about it. Going to be a fun weekend. Thank you again for joining me on the show this week. And I'm sure I'll see you next week for another recap show. And as of course, thanks to everybody for tuning in to the Drivers Meeting podcast. Thanks to our partners, DoorDash and 5150 HMS Motorsport, PFC Brakes. Thanks to Bet Online. Thanks to Bleed Podcasting Network. And most importantly, thanks to all the viewers for tuning in, and we'll see you all later in the week.